Welcome, dear friends. It's really nice to be with you again. Thanks for showing up. And welcome to everybody who's listening to this as an archive, too. We've got some really important insights today from Gabriel. This is Richard, by the way, Richard Sachs. And Gabriel Cousins is in the Middle East, and he's got some insights into what's actually going on there that we might not hear clearly from the mainstream media or a lot of other sources that are government connected. And so this insight is important for knowing how to bring about peace in the planet. And the Middle East is kind of a microcosm in a way with some unique aspects to what's happening. So we'll have a usual short time to talk, but it's going to be valuable. So here we go. Welcome, Gabriel. Thanks for being here.
Richard, thank you. And blessings and love to everyone. And we say shalom, shalom, shalom. Om Itakiasin to all my relations, Native American. So first let's start with a little dance and singing, and then we're going to take a look at the cultural understanding of what's going on in the Middle East. Like, why is it that people in Syria, the Arab Muslims in Syria, are celebrating that Nasrallah has been assassinated? And even in Tehran, why are they celebrating? That doesn't make any sense. I thought there was a war between Israel and all the Arab states. So I'm saying we're going to kind of address those issues and maybe get to a deeper layer of understanding what's going on in people. Okay, but first we'll dance. Dance for a little spiritual joy, and then we'll meditate and for just a minute or two. Here we go. Yes. Okay, just go into meditation for a minute or two. Just focus on my eyes. Feel the spiritual energy coming through. In India, we call it Shakti. And now into meditation for a minute or two. Okay, so we come out of meditation. And now let's just take a look at the question you raised. Today, I saw people celebrating the death of Nasrallah in Iran, in Syria, and in Lebanon. People dancing in the streets. How come? They're all Arabs, they're all Muslims. Why is that happening? There's a war with Israel. What's going on here? And the answer to that gives you much more insight into what's happening in the Middle East. Okay, and I think that's the important thing to really get here. So what is happening on that level? The key in the Middle East, these people tend to gravitate to the strongest tribe. Point one. Israel, doing what it's doing, suddenly is re-emerged back as, instead of weak, because of what happened on October 7th, now is emerging as strong because of what they're doing in Lebanon against Hezbollah, which is perhaps the largest terror organization in the world. And I'll say how far that goes. I was in Argentina when they blew up a temple. I don't know, 15 years ago. It was a while ago. And they were still having issues with it, but it was Hezbollah. And, you know, it's a worldwide organization, probably the strongest worldwide organization in that way, terrorist organization. Okay, so they're no small thing. So Israel politically assassinates their leader, and it just changes everything. Now, there's more to it. For example, Hezbollah, under Nasrallah, killed thousands, or I should say hundreds of thousands, as far as I can tell, of Syrians. They literally went in and go into a town and kill everybody. There's one town up in a mountain, you know, two towns up in the mountains where they couldn't really approach them. What they did is blockaded the towns, and people starved to death. People remember that. That's an important thing. People do remember that's a tribal attack, and there hasn't been a forgiveness. Well, Sunnis, Shiites, doesn't matter when you're talking at that level. Yes, it matters when you realize that Iran are Shiites and Hezbollah are Shiites, and they're very unpopular in the Middle East. Okay, the Sunnis, the Arab world, remember, Iran are Persians, they're not Arabs. There's a lot of prejudice against Persians. A lot of prejudice by the Persians against Arabs. They don't like each other. So you have all these cross currents going on that are kind of speaking more to reality. So when Israel is going to, it's no accident when Israel is going to make a treaty with Saudi Arabia and the Sunnis, that you had an attack from the Shiites October 7th to kind of block that. It's going to happen now. But we are talking tribal, you know, and we're talking Shiites and Sunnis, and there are even some Shiites who are against the Hezbollah Shiites, who are tribal in that way. So we are looking at Middle East in a very different way when you start to see this whole thing. The Persians, and it's maybe easier to see it that way, the Iranians have a lot of anger at the Arabs for a massacre and enslavement that occurred hundreds of years ago. Okay? That people have those memories, that, you know, they're tribal memories. So there's a lot of friction in that way. There's a lot of friction between the Sunnis and Shiites. Okay? So, what does that have to do with Israel? So we need to understand that the Sunnis have a certain alliance with Israel, Sunnis being Saudi Arabia, etc. Most of the Arabs are Sunnis. And can't so publicly, but privately are very happy that Israel is now turning the tables against Iran and its, you know, supporters like Hezbollah and like Hamas. Okay, so that plays a much, much, much bigger role in understanding the Middle East than just straight kind of anti-Israel or anti-Hamas or whatever. These are big roles. Another issue, again, with ego and pride being very important in the politics, is Hamas went and attacked Israel without organizing it with Iran. And that really angered the Iranians. But it's also Hamas are Shiites, okay? But they're Arabs. The Iranians are Shiites, but they're Persians. So you got two variables going on here. And so they haven't had that support from Iran. I mean, yes, when Biden gave, I don't know, the last 20 million or so, he gave 36 million that he gave to Iran, billion that he gave to Iran, some of that flow did go to Hamas as support, like 6 billion went to Hamas. This is after October 7th, where Biden's still giving money to, you know, Iran, and they did give money to Hamas. Okay, so all these issues are playing out in the midst of quote, Israel war. But again, the allegiances change according to who's also strongest. So we may be looking at an alliance between Saudi Arabia and Israel, as it was happening before that first attack, October 7th. Things are shifting, but they're tribal shiftings. Okay? And even though we have Muslims, we have Sunnis, and we have Shiites, they don't get really, they fight each other very strongly. So it would be safe to say, in general, that the Sunni Muslims tend to align with Israel against the Shiite Muslims, particularly if they're from Iran. So you can see the play of the tribal plays going on in this whole process. And again, we have the strongest that people will ally with that because they feel they get some protection. I don't think it's any secret that the U.S. doesn't understand this, number one. And so you can't count on them. You can't count on their alliance. You know, can Saudi Arabia count on them? No, but maybe will they count on Israel? But more likely, because they have real things they do together against the Iranian Persian Shiites. Okay, there's kind of more tribal gatherings, whereas U.S. is kind of doing a lot of deals with Iran and money things and, giving them billions of dollars after October 7th. It's like, what are you doing? So Middle East politics are more about, again, I'm going to use the word tribal, whether it's religious tribal or vocational tribal, rivals against each other. It's been going on for literally hundreds and hundreds of years. Resentments have been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years. And alliances around those. So I hope that gives you an insight into the complexity of this, what's going on. Richard, do you have anything you want to share with that?
I think it's a good introduction, Gabriel. And one of the things that I'd like to mention is that the definition of terrorist organization depends on point of view. You know, I'm sitting in the U.S., And I have friends in the military, and I consider them great people. But the military is being misused by the U.S. and has been misused for decades or longer. And it's become a terrorist organization. And the people in Lebanon may not think of Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, but all of these militaries have been used that way, misused that way, including the Israeli military. And I'm looking at an example of what happened with the exploding cell phones and pagers recently. That was not a defensive action. That's a terrorist act. And it doesn't reflect on the people and the general population, in my opinion. It's the people who are running both sides. And the U.S., for example, is funding both sides of the conflict in the Middle East. Billions to Israel and billions to the other side as well. So it's not okay. One side.
I think we need to make a... Well, let me just say this. The cell phone thing, from an Israeli point of view, was brilliant. It didn't kill civilians. Only people who had cell phones and walkie-talkies and other, you know, were people who were Hezbollah. So
we saw videos of civilians being killed by it.
No, you can't be, if you've got that cell phone, that's a government issued, it's a government issued cell phone. Okay.
So the videos were fake then?
What?
Those videos were fake that showed the
No, enemy. They weren't fake. But not everybody's wearing a uniform. Yeah, there's a big difference. That's also with Hamas. They don't all wear uniforms. You don't get those cell phones unless you're part of the military terrorist operations. Those are only issued to that. That's how it's distinguished. So that's why it was extremely clean that you weren't terrorizing the population. It did freak people out for sure. That was part of it. But the only people who got injured or killed were actually fighters, whether they're wearing a uniform or not. They were not civilians. That's really important to get. Just like Hamas in Gaza, there are many, many people who came across and killed and mutilated that rape woman who were not wearing uniforms. Okay? But they were not civilians. That's important. Many of the prisoners, the hostages, have been kept in, quote, civilian homes. And they're not civilians because they're holding people prisoners and they're acting for Hamas. They're just not wearing a uniform. Very important to get clear on that, because otherwise we use those words incorrectly. We will also point out that they are, they've made it very clear, actually, because they're putting notices out. If you've got rockets stored in your house, because, you made a deal with Hamas, Hezbollah, what's the deal? The deal is, you put rockets in your house and you get kind of a lot of discount on what you're paying for your house. Now, here's the person storing rockets, weapons, be shot at Israel. Are they civilians? Or are they auxiliary, terrorists? Well, if you got a rockets in your house, I'm going to call you a terrorist. Because those are weapons used to shoot at people, and creating 80,000 displaced Israelis in the north. So that's the distinction. It's not whether you're wearing a uniform, it's like, are you actively? So in Israel, they are actively letting people know that you have stored rockets in your house, because you get, when they're building the buildings, you get extra room to do that. You better leave, because we are going to after those houses. Okay? And how do they know? Because they had these cell phones that they were able to monitor, so they know where all the rockets are. That's why they're doing what they're doing. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Yeah, I just got different information that the cell phones, or the pagers to be specific, were not only in the hands of the government people, they were also in the hands of some civilians. No. And if that's not true, it changes the story.
Right. It's really not true. It's only issued to government people. Okay.
And
that was because they're at war and they're cooperating, and that's how they know where the rockets are stored, because those people in those houses are part of the ununiformed terrorists versus the uniformed terrorists.
Right. Now, they don't see themselves as terrorists, though, I would imagine.
Well, I think they do. I would say Hamas in Gaza, they do. They're identified with Hamas, even though they're not wearing a uniform. And it's hard because people come in and they're not wearing a uniform, suddenly they start shooting at you. That makes it really difficult, okay? Because they're not wearing a uniform.
Right.
So you have to use other ways of kind of identifying. And the same thing, you got rockets in your house. Yeah, you're not wearing a uniform, but you are participating as a terrorist by storing these, you know, equipment like rockets. Right. That's how it isn't, you know, black and white. That's too easy for the Middle East. It's got these subtleties. But you didn't get a walkie-talkie or a pager or a cell phone, because only their cell phones had that, you know, explosives in it.
I think the same mentality was used to justify what was done to the people in Gaza, too, that they were all involved. So killing.
And we would say, according to the polls, 90% of the people in Gaza were very much in favor and celebrating October 7th. That seems to be the case. And, you know, really participated in it at different levels of participation.
Yeah. And again, the independently acquired videos of what happened in Gaza, to me, I don't see any way to justify it at all. It looks like terrorism to me by the Israeli forces.
So I heard somebody today talking about it, kind of a historian, and he said, you know, in World War II, when the Allies attacked Berlin and bombed, is that terrorized? When they bombed different German cities, was that terrorism at the point of the Allies?
Yeah, the whole war was completely unnecessary.
That's not the point.
Yeah, it was.
Are the Allies in bombing Berlin, are they terrorists?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, by that definition, both sides are terrorists.
That's right. That's what I see.
Okay.
I don't think the kid who dies cares what the justification is.
Okay. But in terms of legal definition, I think what you're saying is all war is bad. I agree. Okay? And what the Bible says is, somebody comes to kill you, it is your moral obligation. I'm going to use the word moral obligation to get up and kill them first, because you are under obligation to preserve your own life.
Yeah, so, I don't see anything wrong with that. That's different than bombing Berlin.
No, not when you have a war going on, and the Nazis' approach was to kill and destroy, you know, all the other nations around, or conquer really the whole world.
They were the idiot puppets controlled by the bankers.
But they cooperated. See, you don't get an excuse for being dumb.
Yeah, I'm not excusing anything. I'm looking at solutions. You know,
solution is waking up to see our oneness in humanity. We aren't going to get to that solution until people stop. Until there's some level of peace to evolve. The Essenes predicted by spring 2025, we would begin a 75-year process towards 1,000 years of peace. So I think we're close to that. I think this war And also the war in Ukraine, which is killing many more thousands of people. It's pretty scary what's going on in Ukraine.
Right.
Are very good medicine for waking up. But right now, see, you got to understand, like, Lebanon is literally walking distance from where I live. It would take me a day to get there. Half a day. It's very close.
Right.
And I can easily drive to Golan Heights in an hour and a half. You understand what I'm saying? Things are very close. Judea and Samaria are half hour, literally, or 45 minutes from the Ben Gurion Airport. Things are very close, so it's not so easy that everybody's a terrorist. You know, you have to be able to defend yourself.
Yeah.
And you don't have a lot of time to defend yourself when you see what's happening. That's part of what's going on.
Now, I'm saying that in the long run, there has to be something at a higher level, because just defending yourself against endless attacks is not going to be a solution.
Correct. And that's why we want people to meditate and pray and kind of create a universal field of peace. That's why we talk about the World Healing Meditation, which we do on Sundays, 6:30, 6:20 Israel time, because that is the solution, period.
Yeah.
You can't see their oneness. You can't get beyond that.
You need a way to wake up the ones you think are the bad guys, and it can't be done by debate.
Right. I mean, there's this classic in World War One, I think. It was Christmas.
Yes, that was a beautiful example of what's possible.
Yeah, and everybody came out of the trenches and gave each other gifts and things. They went back and started shooting each other again. But there was, hey, let's celebrate Christmas even for an hour. We need a break here.
And, you know, the only reason they started shooting each other again was because the officers above them got ordered to do that, and they were not allowed to have peace.
So I think all what's going on is pointing, it's so bad, it's pointing us in that direction.
You're saying at some point people won't be able to stand it anymore.
No, I'm saying at some point people will see their oneness. Okay? That, you know, that's why you say, oh, they're Muslims. Oh, yeah. But they're celebrating Nasrallah's political assassination in Syria, in Iran, and in Lebanon. How is that possible? Because they see a bigger picture already. They see alliances. From alliances, you can build the levels of peace.
And you
it makes it harder when the U.S. is feeding, monetarily both sides and almost stimulating this constant war. It does make it harder.
You know, a lot of it seems to be stemming from misidentification, because who we really are is not the roles that people are playing.
Oh, for sure. That's another level of spiritual awareness, okay?
Right.
For sure, we're not our bodies, we're not our genders, we're not, all those things about, gender identity and all that, they and thee, and, No, we're prior to all of that.
Right.
But the first step is just to see allies coming together, and from that, alliances begin to work towards peace, because war is so negative, so self-defeating. Nobody wins.
That's a consciousness issue as well. You know, people yeah. are there's been efforts to control morality with religion, telling people, you better be moral or God's going to smite you, you know, and throw you into hell or something like that. And it never works in the long run because people obey for a while out of fear and then they divert and start being immoral again. And over this happens. But when consciousness changes, you don't have that problem. Even if people are illiterate and can't read what they're supposed to do, they know by how it feels.
I totally agree with you. And that's where it needs to go. And as I say, the seeing, you know, prophecy is that will, that process will more actively begin in 2025. So we're close to the beginning of that process, starting a 75-year transition into a 1,000-year speech, which is, of course, very good.
I want to put in a position to make it, a petition to make it faster.
Why not? You know?
Yeah, is there some kind of law that it has to take 75 years?
No, it's just prophecy. Prophecy, unfortunately, is pretty accurate.
So we could negotiate giving all the credit to the prophet and saying, we'll make you the best prophet in the universe, but let's do it in 6 months.
Yeah, that'd be great. It could happen.
You can have the credit.
They don't make an exact time. I'm just saying there's a transition period. And that transition period to 1,000 years of peace, that, you know, begins in spring 2025. So that's the good news. So how long the transition is, that depends on the players and the shift in consciousness.
Right. So you're optimistic overall at this point.
I'm very optimistic. I mean, I'm not saying there isn't bombs being dropped there where we live, and we're told we can't go to the beaches, and on and on. People a little bit north are kind of big, you know, my assistant, she's not moving, she and her family, she's pregnant, moving back, you know, a little bit closer to me, to be moving to her parents' home. It's not the most convenient, let's put it that way. But it's all going to pass. They can't keep this up for too long, and the futility of it becomes more and more obvious.
Right. And you're interacting in your daily life with people from all different countries. And seeing some kind of...
Oh, yeah. In our marketplace, where we go, the mall, it's called the mall, just like in the U.S., you know, there's all kinds of Arab, you know, Muslim energies, you know, all over. Everybody gets a little... Nobody's that interested in all this. But I will say this. When we go into health food stores, the best health food store is run by these Muslim women. They're super nice. You know, yes, we're customers, but they're just nice. We smile, we make an effort. You know, they don't touch anything. It's alcohol, so we will buy wine for Shabbat. We move the bottle so they don't have to touch it. I mean, it's that kind of cooperation. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
And people are nice. The men, there's a kind of a subtle scowl that's there a little bit. You know, when we go to a greenhouse where they're selling flowers, the older men are very, very nice. They will shake your hand and really make a connection. So we're all living together, okay? That's really important to understand. That's why I'm kind of optimistic, because that is there. And, you know, people helping each other. And you're all shopping in the same stores. You know,
it's the same thing.
Yeah. So I'm saying, I know it can work. That's what I'm saying.
In America, the media is trying to get us to hate people from Russia and support war at any cost.
Right. This is not really what's happening here. People are somewhat unified. We help each other. once our something happened to our car, I don't know exactly, we got stuck in the parking lot there. It was at night. And the people who were the night watch were Arabs, and they completely took care of us. They really, really, really helped. We eventually, after an hour or so, I mean, this is like midnight at the time, we got, you know, they really helped us. We got the car going. You know, it was super kind of way to jumpstart it, this, that, the other way. So I'm saying there's much more cooperation than people think among the common people.
Yeah, I agree with you. In America, one of the examples of that is the media is telling us that people who are supporting Trump are terrorists and racists and homophobic and nasty people and all this stuff. And then you go to one of the events and everybody's friendly. It's completely different. And what do you, we're about a month away from a major election in the U.S. now. What influence of that do you see on the progression toward harmony and peace in the world?
Well, I'm a little disappointed at the amount of dissonance and effort to create hate. It's a little disconcerting. You know, it's like, what are they doing? So
our government is really trying to create a terrible environment, and they're willing to blow up the world to do it if they have to.
Right. So to me, that's psychopathic by definition. By definition, not sociopathic.
Yeah. Speaking as a qualified psychiatrist, too.
Right. Right. But speaking clinical diagnostic, people using their power and influence to create harm and liking it. And I think this is what people don't really understand, which I don't see happening here very much, is there in Washington, you really have, and it's coming out a little bit, and in Hollywood, you really have these dark, sadistic groups, satanic groups who are operating. And it gets them high to have these things happen. Now, how do I know these things? Because as a psychiatrist in the United States, I saw people who escaped from all this and had to work through the trauma of this Satanism, being afraid, and lots of things like that. So it really does exist. It shows up more in Hollywood. You know, I don't want to go into the gory details, but it's big in Washington, D.C. as well. So you have all that. I mean, somebody clearly came out with Hillary Clinton and her friends and their blood meals and stuff like that. So that's what is really concerned, okay? That's really deep evil. What I see here is, people of different cultures, but where I live, there are people really trying to get along, trying to make life work for each other, okay? And I think that's the important thing. You know, I had a little bit, because some things are in Hebrew, but not so good with Hebrew. I was trying to get money out of a money machine, where you do something with the card and money comes out. And I was having a hard time. But, some very nice Arab Muslim woman, dressed in the usual, hijab, came over and started to help me.
She knows who you are and that you're a rabbi.
Well, I don't have a sign saying I'm a rabbi. I'm obviously a white Israeli, right?
That's pretty good.
And I'm a tourist, and I don't know what I'm doing. That's what she knows.
Right, okay.
It's pretty obvious who's who and that. and they were helping me. We got it worked out.
It's wonderful. That's an example of somebody going beyond religion, you know, because I've read the Islamic scriptures, and they say you can't be friends with any non-Muslim, period.
Right.
And she's going beyond that.
Yeah. It was like, it was good. But there were several helping. And that's happened a few times. You know? So it isn't, the common people who aren't involved in, you know, psychopathic thinking, like, well, let's create a war so we can win the election. Let's kill, you know, millions of people, you know, but we'll win the election.
That's literally what they're doing.
I know that. That's why I'm saying that. And my point is, no, that's not what I experience. We go to the mall with people. Not that we're hanging out, right? You're just all in the shop together, and you're doing your thing, and people helping each other if they need it, and people smile, and you understand what I mean? It's very mundane. It's very mundane.
It's a hint of what could be normal.
Say it again?
It's a hint of what could be normal.
Yeah, well, it is normal. So the goal, it's normal.
The full normal is even beyond. It's everybody loving each other.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a few steps. This is people are just getting on and trying to help each other. And just, we're all living together. Okay?
Right.
That's why you don't have a whole lot of Israeli Arabs complaining. Because actually, their living situations better than Arabs in most countries, and there's an effort to try to accept each other in this place. So that's why I'm optimistic. Okay? If we get the psychopaths out of control, you know, I think the more common regular people can begin to lead the world in a good way. That's what I'm trying to say.
Psychopaths can wake up. And you gave an example of one person being deprogrammed, escaping the system. That means other ones.
Not one person, more than one person. I gave, you know, I mentioned one, but no, I'm talking about, you know, way more than one person.
Right.
And they're terrified and they're scared. It's like, whoa. But, so I'm optimistic for that reason.
So you want to wrap it up with what the lesson is for the whole insight in the Middle East?
Yeah, we've gone over a little bit. The lesson is things are not as polar as they look. Things start at tribal, and then we move from tribal, whatever that happens to be, into working to see our humanity together, our collective humanity. So we go from tribal to more collective understanding. And from that, we move towards world peace, where everybody understands we're part of the collective whole. And then, at a higher spiritual plane, we begin to see our oneness as we meditate and spend our energy going in rather than fighting outward. And then we see the oneness. That comes a few steps down the line. So, may everyone be blessed that we get it. And it's going to happen. So what I just shared is what I experienced. So I don't think I'm being unreasonably optimistic. You know? So it's good. People wanting to do good with each other. You know, from Arabs and Jews and all that stuff. So it's exciting. So that's what's happening for me, and I bless everyone that we hold on to that. We develop that optimism that we as human beings can transform this world into one where people first cooperate and see their oneness, and ultimately you know, create a world of real peace. Blessings to everyone, and thank you all for attending. Shalom, shalom, shalom. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Oh, protect us.
Thank you, Gabriel. That optimism is so necessary and vital right now. And it's very much.
We're right in it, you know. I'm living in the Middle East. This is really cool. But do get along. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
Even with normal circumstances.
Who we are will eventually come out. And it could be sooner than later.
Yes. Well, it's already here. My daily experience, you know, and I'm not talking about big meditation groups. I'm just not people at the market. You know, get along. So I bless you, Richard, and Doug behind the scenes. It's cool. This is all very good.
Yes, I agree. And remember, I want to remind the audience that you can be part of this. The minute that you smile at somebody and project positive energy, even if they're not in your physical presence, you can do that, and it has a massive impact on the world. So I'll just mention Dr. Cousins' programs at drcousins.com, treeoflife.mn.co, and I think I'm close to being able to promote Planetary Healing Club, planetaryhealingclub.com. It all depends on the finalization of something that I've been dealing with for the last 4 years that I'm hopeful is near over, and Gabriel's optimism is much appreciated and very helpful. So anyway, I wish everybody a lot of love and a wonderful week. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you.